Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're about to find out what's happening in Cleveland and with the Republican Convention, the latest news, where it is. We're joined by Charles Ellison, who has the Ellison Report here on WEAA and is also now the national correspondent for us. Charles, good to have you with us.
Mark, it's always good to be here, man. Good to talk with you.
And Gene Craig is with us. Eugene Craig is a grassroots activist and third vice chair of the Republican Party of the state of Maryland. Gene, good to have you with us.
Hey, brother. Always good to be my big bro. How you feeling?
Good. So where are you, in Cleveland or Baltimore?
I am in Baltimore, but I will be in Cleveland this time tomorrow.
So let's talk about what we think is happening. Charles Ellison, you're watching this closely. Before we turn to Eugene, talk a bit about what you see is happening in Cleveland. Interesting to see who the lineup of guests are tonight, Duck Dynasty.
Right. Yeah.
Which says a lot.
Already, exactly. It says a lot. You know, it says that, you know, definitely not so much the RNC, but Donald Trump's camp is going for the unpredictable, for the unscripted, for the unstaged. That's what it's all about. So we should expect a lot of surprises, just not tonight, but also throughout the week. In fact, you know, there are reports that Donald Trump himself may even try to speak. He might break convention tradition and even try to speak tonight. He may try to speak every
alert.
Night. He might try to make appearances. So people are saying that, you know, we should not expect the typical Republican convention or major political party convention by any standard. I mean, so the way it's starting out right now is just a big focus on foreign policy. You do have his wife supposed to be speaking, is scheduled to speak today. Not just Duck Dynasty, but you also have a couple of survivors of the Benghazi Libya assault that are also slated to speak as well. It's going to be a big focus on foreign policy, on national security. It's very tense times in the wake of Nice, in the wake of Turkey, and also in the wake of these shootings in Dallas and Baton Rouge. Republicans are definitely going to try to leverage those events and try to say, hey, we're the party that keeps you safe.
Gene?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, there's a lot of activity going on. If you know, from what I'm hearing coming out of Cleveland, Thursday and Friday were interesting days in the committee hearings and whatnot. Pretty much what has taken place is Team Trump and the worst elements of the establishment wing of the Republican Party have pretty much signed a blood oath together. And, you know, they spent, you know, a good part of the day Thursday and Friday hammering out rules that will concentrate power within the hands of Rex Priebus. And so, you know, within the next 2 hours, when the convention gavels in and, you know, the rule committee report is given, from what I'm hearing, there will be a minority report given to force a roll call vote on the rules. And within this minority report, from what I've been told, will contain a rule to unbind the delegates.
Could that, you know, do you think that could pass?
I think it's a possibility. It's a possibility. But you know, things are interesting. They're interesting. I've been getting regular updates out of Cleveland. I mean, minute by minute, you know, things that are going on up there on the ground. And quite frankly, you know, folks that, you know, political junkies like we are and pay attention to these things. What the chair and Team Trump tried to pull for Thursday and Friday, makes what Ginsburg did in 2012 look like child play. Quite frankly, it looks like child play.
So, let me turn to, in the time we have, let me just a quick jump back to Charles. You want to comment on what you just heard, Charles, before I have a different question?
I'm just not, you know, for every, just a few thoughts there, Mark, real quick. You know, for every person I hear within the Republican Party machine or Republican Party apparatus, whether it's on Capitol Hill, at the RNC, or even folks that are headed to Cleveland or going to Cleveland, for every person I hear who's a part of the Never Trump movement, there are like three people who say, you know what, at the end of the day, we just want to win. And I get this feeling, in talking to a lot of sources, because look at Eugene. Eugene's going to Cleveland. And, you know, there are a lot of, you know, sorry to say, I mean, and I talk to a lot of Republicans, a lot of black Republicans, too, who are like, you know, they're publicly saying, oh, they've got reservations about Trump, but then they're still going to Cleveland. Like, I was talking to one a Republican Party nominee from a battleground state who was like, well, the only reason I'm not going to Cleveland is because, you know, they didn't schedule me for a speech. And it's like, but, you know, hey, this guy has been throwing out some very vitriolic rhetoric, very bigoted rhetoric. And, you know, you would think that there'd be people not showing up in Cleveland, particularly people of color, based on their nominees or their presumptive nominees record for just essentially, you know, he's been stirring this racial dog whistle pot for a bit of a year now. So, but the fact, I mean, that speaks volumes that even Eugene is finding time to go to Cleveland, but, you know, instead of just staying in Baltimore and just, you know, shorter protests. And I'm hearing a lot of folks who are saying, you know, on one end, a month ago, they're saying, oh, I would never go to Cleveland. But they're still going to go because at the end of the day, Republicans unify.
Let me let Gene respond.
The thing is this. This isn't the Donald Trump convention. This is the Republican National Committee convention. At the end of the day, this is a convention highlighting the Republican Party. Yes, Donald Trump will be nominated, you know, for the office, you know, President of the United States. But this isn't the convention, you know, for Donald. This is the Republican Party convention. That's point number one. Point number two: there are, you know, and I can say this with great confidence. There are a significant amount of black activists and Latino activists that have spent years within the party that aren't going to Cleveland. You know, I could tell you with you know, as a member of the family, I could tell you with great confidence that a significant, and I mean an extremely significant portion of senior elder black Republican leadership will not be in Cleveland.
Wait a minute, Charles, let Gene finish. The third part of this is this.
You don't cede ground unless you're forced to, all right? Yeah, we're going to lose some ground with Donald Trump as a nominee and the rhetoric that's coming out of him, but you don't give up your seat at the table. And the seat that black Republicans, Latino Republicans have earned at the table is well worth it. It's, you know, it's worth it for us to show up. And quite frankly, you know, some of the events going on around the convention, you know, particularly two that I'm co-hosting tomorrow, you know, they aren't there to necessarily celebrate Donald Trump, but to celebrate the achievement of black Republicans, to celebrate, you know, moving things like issues like criminal justice reform forward within the Republican Party.
All right, so let me let Charles jump back in. I'm sorry, Gene. I just want to get both of you have a chance in the time we have. Charles?
No, I just find it fascinating that Eugene Craig, I mean, he's a very prominent black Republican activist, and I've been on the radio with him before, and he's very down to earth, and he's very much about his community, about the plight of black people. And the fact that he's not just outright denouncing Donald Trump, and a lot of other black Republicans aren't outright publicly denouncing someone who's pretty much been a very open bigot for the best part of a year, I mean, that's just very telling. And yes, I mean, it's very telling when you have all the black senior staff at the RNC, or most of them, leaving en masse. This happened several months ago from the RNC, and no one wants to admit publicly, and they all left quietly because they were uncomfortable that he was becoming the presumptive nominee. But they just don't want to say it publicly because everybody's afraid of losing jobs. I mean, it's not about black Republicans having a seat at the table now, Eugene. Let's be real, because I've worked on both sides of the aisle. I worked for both Democrats and for some very ranking senior Republicans as well. And I know how it works. It's not about having a seat at the table. It's about black Republicans having jobs. And people are afraid of speaking out against this very questionable presumptive nominee because they're afraid of losing their position, losing a contract, or losing a job within the party machine. Let's just keep it real.
Well, I'll put it this way. There hasn't been an interview I've given. There hasn't been a piece that I've written where I have not been Donald Trump. And this is from day one. I mean, I'm literally giving this on air right now, sitting in a Rand Paul T-shirt. You know, and you know, to set further, there have been a lot of folks that have been both publicly and privately critical of Donald Trump and the RNC's handling of Donald Trump. I mean, there's a, you know, huge blow up over a couple of articles a week and a half ago over both public and private criticism of the way Donald Trump has been handling and the way that RNC is Donald Trump. I can't necessarily speak on, you know, the mass exodus of black Republicans from the RNC staff. I am friends with a lot of those folks, and, you know, if they want to tell their story, I'll let them tell, you know, be the, you know, give them that space and breathing to tell, you know, why they left. But I do. I mean, I do think it's disingenuous to say that minority Republicans aren't speaking out.
So let me,
withholding support. Are withholding support. And when I say senior black elder leadership, I mean household names.
So let me ask this, another piece of this. I mean, it's also watching what's going on here and what's going to be happening outside the convention.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans who support carrying guns, they want to stop. They want to say no gun, and you have a right to carry in Cleveland.
Right.
Yet they're saying you should take away that right during the convention. A, and B, they're calling in 1,200 police from all over the country,
right,
to patrol those streets.
Yeah. So, from my understanding, that the extremely heavy police, I've had a couple of friends describe it straight. Hey, this is the police state up there. Well, my understanding is that it's the convention is because of the heightened secure nature of them, is that they typically are handled with an overwhelming amount of police force.
Right.
The other part of that is this. I think it's I have a disdain for public sector unions. I have a really, really big disdain for police unions. I'm gonna tell you why. I mean, this police union is the same police union that told Tamir Rice's family that they should take the settlement money and shut up.
Right.
So this police department, this police union has no respect for anybody's rights.
So, Gene, we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
We only have a few 3 minutes left, and I want to give Charles a chance to weigh in as well. I'm sorry to keep bouncing back and forth.
The other big story, Mark, at the top of the convention is obviously what's happened in Dallas, what happened in Baton Rouge. I mean, the timing couldn't be any worse as far as the killing of three police officers in Baton Rouge. And so the police union in Cleveland saying, hey, you know what, we should just suspend the open carry law here in Ohio, and really the Ohio government is not going to be showing up.
Governor has a power. You're going to have a call special session in the General Assembly and say, hey, we're going to pass a law to rescind open carry. I mean, what is going to come after that?
Okay, what they're hoping for is that the governor would exercise some sort of executive order. That's within the realm of possibility, but obviously that's not going to be done because Governor John Kasich has said he's not going to do it.
So, gentlemen, we're
almost out of time here.
John Kasich, by no stretch, is Rick Perry or some huge right wing governor, right?
He's certainly letting a lot of voter suppression laws stand in his state, so which could give Republicans an edge in that battleground state. So if they're so never Trump. Or they have certain reservations about their nominee, they're certainly not showing it by constantly pressing on these voter suppression strategies in these battleground states like Ohio and North Carolina and elsewhere.
So we have to wind this down, but we're going to be talking to both of these gentlemen all during the week. And it's going to be interesting conversations, as you can see. It's going to be good. And just the latest polls come out. Let me just tell you what they are very quickly. NBC News Wall Street says Hillary Clinton 46%, unchanged since June. Donald Trump 41%, unchanged since June. But ABC News Post, Washington Post poll has Clinton at 47%, down from 51% in June, and Donald Trump 43%, up from 39% in June. Right. CNN says Hillary Clinton 49%, up from 47% in June, and Donald Trump 42%, unchanged, which just says a great deal about how polls say lots of stuff. We don't know which one's right.
Yeah.
real quick, real interesting point here. I'll be very quick, Mark.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton's white voter support has dropped on average 6 percentage points since after Dallas. We might see more of that drop in the post-Baton Rouge landscape. So it's not just emails here.
Uh-huh.
When you have that many white voters jumping ship from Hillary Clinton, now her white voter support in the YouGov poll actually dipped below 30% after Dallas. So, that's the kind of climate that we're in right now. That's the kind of polling that we're seeing. That's not surprising. Also, combine that with the usual post-convention bump that the nominees are going to get.
Well, we'll get back into this tomorrow and the next day, and I do appreciate you both taking the time. Sorry it was a truncated segment. We had the other one went over.
No problem.
But Charles Ellison, political strategist, host of the also important WEAA, WEAA's national national correspondent, Eugene Craig III, grassroots activist and third vice chair of the Maryland State Republican Party, who will be in Cleveland. Eugene and Charles, thank you both so much for taking the time.
Appreciate
with
it.
Us.
Thanks so much.
And I want to thank you all for taking your time with us today as well. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com, or steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. And it is good to have you all with us today. Intense conversations. Thank you all for jamming the phones and calling in and bringing your ideas to the airwaves. It means a great deal. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are senior producers Mark Henry and Stephanie Mavronis. Our producer is Amani Spence. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Morgan Barber and Calvin Perry. Theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To podcast the Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.